Thank Joanne, of course, for sponsoring and so meaningfully referring to the past as well as to the next generation. Speaking of the relevance of Torah in every generation, so I wanted to choose a topic that both related to the parsha that we just read as well as the time of year, which of course tomorrow is already Erev Yom Kippur. I guess I'll take you back to experience I had in college. Which was really a very impactful one for me and relates to Joanne's point about the role of Torah in every generation. So I was taking a cell biology course and we were studying a process called DNA replication. So I'm going to explain not everybody. So DNA replication is a process whereby DNA, which is of course the genetic material that's in every cell of our bodies, reproduces itself. It's in a highly intricate process, and it's essential for the cells to be able to divide and to replicate themselves, and effectively for the on the micro level for the survival of our organisms. So, it was a really fascinating and very elegant process to study, as are all biological processes. That's why the Rambam says that studying science, this is not like it, meant to be exclusionary to the humanities. That's a whole different shir. Parshas Hazino this week, Zechor Yemos Olam, Binush Nostar Vador, you have to study histories, okay? I don't want anybody to accuse me of discrimination. But the Rambam said that studying sciences was mitzvah d'oraisa, part of the obligation of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem comes from understanding and appreciating God through the world of the cosmos, natural science, etc. So there I was, fulfilling my mitzvah d'oraisa of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. That's how I registered. I was thinking about this. I thought it was, wow, that's really fascinating. So the genetic material that we have in the cell encodes everything in it, right? That's the instruction manual for all of the cellular processes. So including the cell's normal functioning, how the cell is supposed to build all its apparatuses and the lysosomes and the vacuoles and the ribosomes, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the many, 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 many things that's encoded in the genetic material is the capacity for the cell to be able to reproduce itself, for the DNA itself to be able to reproduce itself. So I was sitting there while this lecture was happening, and I said, that's Parshas Vayelech. I didn't say it out loud, but I did comment to myself that that exactly is what Parshas Vayelech is really all about. So what did I mean by that? So I meant the following. Parshas Vayelech is the shortest parsha in the Torah. It's only 30 psukim, but it has two mitzvos. So it has the last two mitzvos in the Torah. And the last two mitzvos in the Torah can be conceptualized, and I would argue should be conceptualized, as not DNA replication, but Torah replication. So it was very elegant indeed, I think, not that he needs my approbation, of Hashem to design the Torah in such a way that the Torah has the capacity to reproduce itself. That is to say, there are many things encoded in the Torah, just like DNA, right? There's the mitzvah of mezuzah encoded in the Torah. There's a mitzvah of building a fence around the roof, of makkah encoded in the Torah. There's a mitzvah of lulav encoded in the Torah. There's a mitzvah of korban pesach encoded in the Torah. But one of the things encoded in the Torah is that you should reproduce the Torah in every generation. So the 612th mitzvah, the penultimate mitzvah in the Torah, is the mitzvah of hakel. And the mitzvah of Hakel is basically every 7 years we get together to publicly read the Torah. And you might conceptualize it as, somehow this is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, of Torah study. But it's very clear that at least the Rambam did not understand it that way. The Rambam understood, and he makes it, quite explicit on multiple occasions where he discusses the laws of Hakel. It's not in Hilchos Talmud Torah. It's not in Hilchos Tefillah, where the Rambam discusses Kriyas HaTorah. It's in Hilchos Chagiga. Okay, so that already is suggestive that he understood it as separate and apart. And the Rambam speaks there about the need, he says it on two separate occasions, for people to listen to the Torah as it's being read by the king, Kiyom Shenisna Bo Besinai, as if they were hearing the Torah for the first time at Har Sinai. Matter of fact, much to the Ravid's consternation, the Rambam takes the view that if the first day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos, which is when you're supposed to read Hallel, will fall out on Shabbos, you push off the reading of Hakel to the next day. That the Ravid didn't disagree with. That seems to be explicit in the Rishalmi. But the rationale the Rambam gave was very confusing to the Ravid. So the Rambam says the reason that you should push it off is because you wouldn't be able to blow the chatzotros. So that blowing the trumpets, to announce that you're going to be reading the Torah is somehow so important that you have to delay the mitzvah of Hakel by a day so that the Chatzotros can be sounded. Now, that seems very strange. Like, why would the Chatzotros play such a role? The Rambam doesn't seem to have a source for that. In fact, the Yerushalmi says it's for another reason entirely. But apparently, if the Rambam understood that the whole point was to recreate the experience of Mamad Har Sinai, so what do we know was going on at Mamad Har Sinai? Of course, the sound of the shofar, the choreography, was an essential part of the experience itself. So the Rambam seems to have yet another indication that it's really about recreating the Mamad Har Sinai, that every 7 years, the Jewish people collectively, on the national level, has to reaccept the Torah. And I think the coup de grace here is, you know, like, what was the Rambam's source for the idea? It's probably the Torah itself, because in the 9th chapter of Sefer Devarim, 22 chapters before the mitzvah of Hakel is discussed in chapter 31, so 22 chapters prior to that, Moshe is recounting to the generation that were either very young children or not at all present at Sinai. So Moshe was recounting to them what the experience was like, and he tells them that, of course, on that day he got the two tablets, Valehem Kechol Advarim, and written on them were all the things, Asher Diber Hashem Bahar Mitoch Ha'esh, that God spoke to you from the mountain consumed by fire, Biyom HaKahal, on the day of Kahal. That is to say, the Torah itself refers to Mamad Har Sinai as Yom HaKahal. So the mitzvah of Hakel, Hakel HaTa'am, right, you don't have to, again, be the greatest literature expert in the world to know, right? So you don't have to have the greatest powers of literary discernment to appreciate that Hakel, of course, is a reference back to the original Yom HaKahal, and therefore is to be understood as a way of perpetuating Torah every 7 years. You know, it was wonderful for there to be one historical event called Mamad Har Sinai, but that's not going to make sure, as Joanne said, that Torah lasts in every generation. What's going to be needed is every 7 years is for the Jewish people on the national level to recommit themselves to the entirety of Torah. Now, this will also explain something very strange. The Ramban was very bothered by the idea that young children should attend. It says, Hakel asam hanashim hanashim ve'ataf. Taf usually means afilu yonkei shadayim, the youngest of children. And the Ramban, by the way, ultimately comes to the halachic conclusion that the youngest of children should not be there, because what could they possibly get from the experience? They're 6 weeks old, they're 6 months old, they don't really know what's going on. There is an explicit Gemara in Chagiga, we'll come back to about 9 minutes from now, which says that you should bring the young children, and we'll try to explain why. But the Ramban drew the halachic conclusion that the youngest of children should not be present. Now, how they got group leaders is a really good question, because everybody else had to be there. So I don't know. The Ramban doesn't explain that. Now, why the Ramban left this out, it's very surprising to me. You know, we always need to, I spend a lot of time thinking about this time of year, what's going to happen with the kids. So the Ramban doesn't address the question of groups, to the best of my knowledge. Okay, how it happened, we don't know. But everybody else, including the Rambam and Rashi, etc., they believe the youngest of children are there. So what are they doing there? But if you believe it's a recreation of Mamad Har Sinai, so everybody was at Mamad Har Sinai. There were no groups there either. So you really need to have everybody present. And then we'll come back to a related point at the very end of the year. So again, the penultimate mitzvah in the Torah is essentially the recipe for the national perpetuation of Torah. Okay, Hakel Asam Hanashim Vaneshim Vatav. What is, anybody happen to know, what is the last mitzvah in the Torah? The right of Sefer Torah. So now that's the individual perpetuation of the Torah itself. Again, the last two codons in the Torah, right? Codon is the genetic unit of the three nucleotides that tells you what, you know, you're supposed to build, right? So the last two codons in the Torah, kivayachol, are you have to nationally recommit to the Torah, that in every generation, each individual must write their own Sefer Torah. So again, you know, if I had to make it up, I'm not saying I would, but I would be tempted to, but I don't have to make it up, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Aleph, says, you know, let's say you just inherit a Torah from, you know, the previous generation, or from, you know, you have two from your father and your grandfather. You have three because your great-grandfather, it's not the kind of thing you throw out, right? So the Gemara says you must write your own. And writing your own from beginning to end, not everybody can, obviously. Sometimes you have to hire an agent. But if you actually write it yourself, Ma'ale Allah Vakasuv Ki'ilu Kibla Mehar Sinai. It's considered as if you were standing at Har Sinai and you received the Torah yourself. Now, is that just, you know, a random expression? Of course not. What Chazal understood, what's so critical to understand, is the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah is not because we were concerned that there would be a Torah shortage, but it's a critical experience for a person to undergo to recommit themselves to the process of Har Sinai. So the last two mitzvahs in the Torah, if you take them as a package, are all about this point. Hakel is the national reacceptance of the Torah, the national recreation of Mamad Har Sinai, and individual writing the Sefer Torah. Don't take it from me, take it from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Daf Chaf Aleph, Ki'ilu Kiblo Mehar Sinai. It's as if you receive the Torah yourself from Har Sinai. So the last two mitzvahs in the Torah, just, you know, exquisite, right, are the Torah's way of perpetuating itself. The Torah knew that there would be a problem of perpetuating in every generation, right? That it's a very complex thing to do. You know, after all, Thomas Jefferson said of the American Constitution, again, we want to be inclusive on this biological day of, you know, all the other disciplines here. So Thomas Jefferson said that he thought they should have a constitutional convention every 19 years so that they could abrogate the old Constitution, right? Enlightenment thinkers like Jefferson was believed in progress. So you're going to make progress at least every 19 years, so you should write a new Constitution. So the Torah says, you know, there's a great temptation to do that. Everybody says, we're 19 years more advanced. We understand the world so much better than we did 19 years ago. Let's update the Torah. So the Torah says, no, the Torah is immutable. The Torah represents not human wisdom. If it represented human wisdom, like the Constitution, you should update it every 19 years, or however often you'd like to update it. How Jefferson got to 19, that's a share in itself. Okay? What's that? So the Torah operates in units of seven. It operates based on the Shemitah cycle. That's a very important question. And it's not for now as to why it should be scheduled exactly when it is. There are two mitzvahs that are essentially simultaneous. At the end of the seventh year, two things go into effect. One of them is called Shemitas Ksafim. There's remission of loans. And at the same time, the mitzvah of Hakel goes into effect. I don't think that's an accident, but I don't have time to explain that right now. But that's a very important point. So the Torah basically was concerned about perpetuating itself. On the national level, Hakel, and on the individual level, that's the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. This is like a very, very important idea in its own right, and certainly, it's on our minds, as I said, this time of year. Yom Kippur, in its essence, the Gemara in Tanis is a little perplexed, because the Mishnah there says that Yom Kippur is like the happiest day of the year, tied with Tu B'Av. And so Tu B'Av is like, you know, very fascinating ceremony that goes on. It has to do with perpetuation of the Jewish people and marriages, etc. But Yom Kippur, to describe it as the happiest day of the year, is a little strange, you know, prima facie at least. It's a day of great trepidation. The Rambam describes it as a yom of yira and pachad and tshuva. Hence, we don't recite halal because, as the Gemara says, melech yoshev al kisei din, God is judging us. B'yom Tzom Kippur Yechasemun. You know, V'atem Omrim Shira. The Gemara says, how can you possibly conceive of singing Halal on Yom Kippur if God is actively judging the world? So to describe Yom Kippur as the happiest day of the year is very difficult. So the Gemara says, no, it's actually obvious that you should describe it that way. Why? Because it's a day of Mechila and Slicha for the Jewish people. It's a day of exoneration and expiation. Yom Shenisnu Bo Lucho Shnios. It's a day of acceptance of the Torah that would actually last for us when Moshe came down with the second set of Luchos. It happened to have been Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, in its essence, is a day about second chances, right? The original Yom Kippur, we got the second set of Luchos. So again, it's a day of Kabbalah Torah. And the Rambam says, it's a beautiful formulation, the Rambam talks about the Tshuva of Yom Kippur. He says, since it's Ketz Mechilo Slicha Yisrael, since it's an opportunity for all of us to achieve this expiation, as the second set of Luchos represented, so Lefika Chayavim Hakol Asos Tshuva, and the Rambam actually spells it out, Yachid V'Rabim, both on the individual level and on the communal level. So on this day which is so inextricably linked with Kabbalah Satorah, it's really appropriate to think about the paradigm of Parshas Vayelech and to think about the idea of reaccepting Torah as members of the Jewish nation, but that is not to the exclusion of our own personal experience in terms of writing a Sefer Torah, our own personal Kabbalah Satorah, like the Gemara said, person who actually writes the Torah themselves and not just does it through an agent is Ki'ilu Kiblo Mehar Sinai. Okay, but I think we should go and can go even one step further, and this gets back to Joanne's opening remarks. There is a very important anthropological structure between the individual and the nation. That, of course, is the family. The Gemara in Chagiga asked the question that I alluded to before, the Ramban's question, like why would the youngest children possibly be there? And the Gemara gives a difficult answer. The Gemara says, "Kidei litein schar lemeviyehem," so that those who bring them will receive reward. So how are we to interpret that? What does that mean exactly? Kedei litein schar lemivyehem. Moreover, when the Gemara reports this, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehoshua, who heard this in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, says to those people who told it to him, who initially didn't want to share this information with him, says, Margolis tova haisa biadchem, you were holding on to a precious jewel, and you wanted to cause me to lose it. So like, what's so special about, that's what this literal reaction, the Gemara, uvikashtem la'abda mimeni. So Rabbi Yeshua's instinctive reaction was, this was like groundbreaking. This idea of kedei litein schar lemivyehem. So it's apparently very important, and yet, at least intuitively, I'm not sure they understand it. Like, what's the great reward for bringing kids who are not going to have any understanding or appreciation of Hakel to Hakel? So, you know, anybody who brings small children places knows that it's a very difficult thing to do. It triples your luggage by like a factor of four. Okay, what it does is then you get strollers and you've got bags and then you've got to get snacks and so, you know, is this schar like just lefum tzara agra? Just, you know, because it was so difficult to get them there, you know, so that's the schar. That's what the Mishnah Navo says. You know, the more difficult something is, the greater the reward is. So there are other ways of making it difficult to get to Hakel. You could say, we're going to blindfold people and tell them to go find the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to tie their legs together. You know, we're going to put people up on the top of the mountain that are going to pelt them with oranges and stuff. You know, there are a lot of ways to make it difficult. So what does it mean?
The children are the schar.
So what do you mean by that?
Right. Because there's so many times along the history that you could have just said, forget it, we're done, that's
right.
It, I don't,
but the Ramban will tell you they don't understand it anyway.
But
they're not appreciating anything.
But even though a child doesn't understand or remember, you still do things that
right.
build upon it. You know, when you take your kid to...
So what do you mean by that? Just sharpen it.
To an activity or whatever we've done with them. First of all, you're teaching them how to behave among other people. But aside from that,
they're not going to remember it. But okay, yeah.
Remember it, but it builds upon it. So even though they don't have the memory, the fact that you can move to the next level because you've built the foundation with them.
Well, what exactly? Just, not to be difficult, but what exactly are you going to be able to do with them now that you took them to Hakel that you couldn't have done before? It's not so simple.
No, it's not so simple. But you say you were there. You make the connection. That is correct.
Okay, very good. They're not going to understand now. But the pasuk says, "Uvnehem asher lo yadu," the young ones that don't know right now, "yishmu v'lamdu." So does that mean right now? Not necessarily. What it could mean is that, you know, we could think about this now in terms of, you know, photographs. It used to be that you'd have to tell a story. Okay, but. You know, but you basically say to the child as they ages, you know, it was really important to us that you be there. The schar lemivyehem is not the schar, I believe, of it was so difficult to get you there. But the ultimate schar is that it makes an enormous impression on a child when that child years from them. It could be that once the child is at his second hakel, right, when he's 7 years old, you know, you say, you know, you were here before. You were but 7 days old. You were but 7 weeks old. But the reason that I brought you is because there is nothing in this world that's more important to me than your perpetuation of Judaism. And that is the schar lemivyehem. And I think that's why Rabbi Yeshua responded the way that he did. He says, oh, margalis tova haisa biyadchem. What a beautiful piece of Torah that you almost, you know, took away from me. So I think this is really the critical point. What parents can do for children, the single most important thing that they can do, is really to express the idea that there is nothing more important in this world than to see Torah perpetuated in each and every generation. And yes, of course, we have this national reacceptance of the Torah. That's called Hakel. It's the penultimate mitzvah in Torah. Yes, it's true. Each individual is obligated to form their own relationship with Torah and to experience Torah as if they got it from Sinai. And that's the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. But the basic instrument and vehicle through which Torah is perpetuated is a middle structure, is the family. Vishinantim b'vanechav, limatim osam es b'neichem. And Hakel is actually... has that level as well. Kedei litein schar lemivyehem. When a child realizes that something is of not just importance, but of absolute importance to parents, that leaves an impression. They may not appreciate it at the time, but it continues to pay itself literally years and decades and generations later. And you think about the aspects of Judaism that really mean the most to people, that the overwhelming majority of them are things that connect back to their family, things that they saw their mother do, their grandfather do, they saw their grandmother do this. That's why minhagim are so important. Minhagim within a family is so, so important to the religious experience. So the idea of transmitting... What's that? That's right. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. So the point is, really, that perpetuation of Torah effectively relies on three things. We accept the Torah as a people. We, of course, in every person's lifetime, person is supposed to cultivate their own relationship with Torah. That's what symbolized the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. But the family unit, you know, is really the critical vehicle for perpetuation of Mitzvah. I'll finish with one thought. We know that the Avodas Yom HaKippurim had three basic components to it. It centered around three confessions that Aharon would make as Kohen Gadol. And lo and behold, it's exactly these three structures. The first thing that Aaron would do is he'd take the parachatas asher lo, v'chiper bado, he would confess for himself. It was about reestablishing his individual relationship with God. The next, v'chiper bado, uva'ad beso, he would have to confess, do a vidue for the kohanim. Now, when Aaron himself was doing it, it was a pretty small group of people. It was three people he was talking about, you know, him and his two sons. Now it could be thousands of people, okay, the kohanim. And then v'chiper ba'ado v'ad beso uva'ad kol kahal Yisrael, right, to atone for the entire Jewish people, and that's through a different animal, the Seir la'azazel, etc. But basically, the Avodas Yom HaKippurim exists at three levels, reestablishing the individual relationship with God, ba'ado, the familial relationship, ba'ad beso, and the national relationship, uva'ad kol kahal Yisrael. So these three structures are really what's renewed every single year, this time of year, and we try, both as individuals, as families, and of course as a nation, to achieve the goal of Yom Kippur, which is Lifnei Hashem Atitaru. So God willing, we'll be able to, and again, we thank Joanne so much for sponsoring today, as individuals and as a nation for sure, but without ever overlooking that critically important middle structure, that family structure, which ultimately becomes the vehicle for the perpetuation of the Masorah, Kidei Litein Schar L'Mevi'ehem. Thank you very much.